Welcome into another edition of Big Talk, college sports with a Midwest perspective, blue collar and blue blood. I'm Dalton Shetler. Over there is my partner, Sam Sprunger. You saw him dancing. Well, his team's still dancing.
So that's right.
Sam is in as good as the mood as it gets.
And you see, I'm not wearing a thing Purdue because I figured I'm going to be as annoying as possible without being dressed in it. So I figured I'd, you know, at least give the aesthetic that I am a regular media person.
It begs the question, where were you in 1980?
I was still crapping my pants. I was 8 months old the last time Purdue made it to the Final Four. So
I don't
remember the last time.
I had a handful of Boilermaker fans that were texting me throughout that day, you being one of them. And just the anxiety, the excitement, everything that was bubbling up for Purdue fans and to finally have that moment.
Well, and the crazy thing is I'm there as media. I was at the games as media, so I could not be openly cheering. So I'm pounding on the keyboard because I'm formerly known as tweeting during the game. And oh my gosh, if somebody was sitting next to me, they thought I was pissed off beyond belief because I was trying to take out my aggression, my excitement, everything into the keyboard.
The keys are fractured here right now on the keyboard.
There is a new laptop that should probably be bought. Yes.
All right. So we're going to get to Sam's weekend in a moment in Motor City, but also we're going to be getting into some other stuff here in the show because the transfer portal is ramped up, but we're going to save that for a rainy day. But I believe both the men's and women's have more than 1,000 entries now.
Insane.
Of players. It's crazy. And it's all going on at the same time as the Final Four, but we've got so much basketball.
I did hear real quick. I did hear that a lot of coaches dislike the final, like the way the Final Four feels now, because a lot of the coaches don't show up to the Final Four like they used to back in the day before this thing called the transfer portal. It was a way to find all the college coaches in one place, like small schools, big schools. It didn't matter. If you were a college coach, you were at the Final Four. And now with the transfer portal, there's hardly any of that. Like, the coaches don't come because they're out trying to recruit.
Well, and you heard Brad Underwood talk about the idea of balancing recruiting in the transfer portal while getting ready to play UConn in an Elite Eight game. And how it's there's something to it. But, like, there's going to be meaty transfer portal discussions to come in a future show. But we're going to keep it with the Final Fours because we got the men's, and we also have the women's Final Four, which – for all intents and purposes, the women's Final Four, as much as I can remember, Sam, and maybe you can help me out here with maybe something in the past, I can't remember a women's Final Four that's been as highly anticipated as what this one's going to be. And ticket prices show that too. I think the average ticket price for Cleveland in the Final Four was $2,200. The cheapest you could get was $900. Like, it's insane. And then, of course, you have the TV ratings and what just happened in the Elite Eight round where – Iowa LSU was at 12.3 million viewers. And then, like, obviously the Caitlin Clark effect is real, right? And so you expect that to squash numbers. But then UConn and USC followed after that, and that still got 6.7 million viewers. And by the way, the men UConn-Illinois Elite Eight game, that had 6.38 million viewers. So the UConn women outdrew the UConn men in the Elite Eight round, which is fascinating. And look, I know I'm not necessarily – doing comparison shopping, I'm not telling you that the women's game is better or more people like it. I'm not doing that.
It's on its way up, though.
But it's also a notable peak or place along in documenting the blossom and evolution that we're seeing here. That's my whole point of bringing it up. That if I posed a question to you, did you ever think a UConn women's game would draw more than a UConn men's game that's a dominant UConn men's team like this? The answer 5 years ago is you're out of your mind. And look how quickly we got to this point.
5 years ago, that was in the middle of the throes of UConn being like UConn.
And they still weren't getting numbers like this.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That is absolutely true. I guess. The women's game is up and rising towards. Now, they're always going to be two different styles of games. It's not comparable in the styles of games, but they can be just as entertaining and just as good as one another. And I'm not saying, you know, I prefer men's basketball, but that's what I grew up on. If you grew up on women's basketball and you like women's basketball better, that's fine. Go for it. Basketball is basketball to me.
But, you know, Sam, I think the beautiful thing that a lot of people are starting to realize is you can do both. Like,
for sure.
I have snorted this men's and women's tournament, like, to the face. Like, I mean, you can – there's enough room for both. Honestly, and for I know sure. we all have fan bandwidth of how much we can take. I mean, I kicked the NBA out for college women's basketball.
Like, NFL is heading out for me.
But you know what I mean? Like, college women's basketball is a real option that you could put on your plate when you're
– have so much room on your plate. Like you said. And so, okay, if I want to add this one really good thing that I'm starting to really, really dig, I'm going to have to get rid of something that I used to love.
Mm-hmm.
And that just, it's exactly like you said, you know, you've moved the NBA off. NBA was off for me for a while ago. You know, it's an occasional, oh, I'll have dessert and watch the playoffs.
Yep.
Vaguely. Couldn't even tell you who the number one teams in are in each conference, honestly. That's how much I don't pay attention to the NBA. But the NFL's getting there. And that's not saying that if you love the NFL and want to love the NFL, go for it. It's just not on my plate anymore. Or it's starting to leave my plate.
Yeah. And again, that all back to the origin of this, you can love whatever ones, but like this is a real option to be putting on your plate now.
For sure.
The level of it. It's worthy of attention, and we're starting to see that. But I do want to talk women's basketball. I do want to talk the Final Four. Yes. But let's go ahead and start, since we've talked about all the topics du jour, with Sam's trip in Detroit, Michigan, because he was there for the Elite Eight
and the Sweet 16.
And got to see a pretty historical moment for the Purdue Boilermakers. So, Sam, the floor is yours. You take us through it.
My goodness gracious. First, I love going the day before and just getting to go into the arena and be able to kind of just, get your bearings about you. Because if you've never been to the building, you kind of don't know the layout and how to get different places and things like that. So I took the first day and just walked around, went to the press conferences, asked some questions and stuff. And that was great. But the game day, and, you know, we got there really extremely early. We were allowed to get in at 3:30. We were there at 3:40. Like that's like we were at our spot. And as soon as people were allowed to come in, all of a sudden you just saw black and gold walking in. And you assume with it being in Detroit, it's going to be more Purdue than anybody. You just assume that. But good Lord, Dalton, like I've formerly known as tweeted that out was the noise in here is I'm sure it's not equal to what Mackey is, and this is on Sunday, but that noise on a Tennessee had a Dalton Connect stole the ball on a fast break dunk to pull Tennessee within one, and you hear the next trip down Braden Smith lays it in, and you thought the roof was gonna explode. Like that it was something that, you know, that is what I will take away. I was there last year when FDU beat Purdue, and you could hear the crowd, and you were there. You could hear the crowd transitioning to an FDU crowd. There was none of that this year. There was nothing that was keeping Purdue from it. And it was a close game. It was a good game. Tennessee had Purdue down by double digits, and then Purdue turned around and went on a 13-0 run to take the lead at the half. And I think that's demoralizing to a team that is sitting there thinking, hey, we're holding one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country to one made three in the first half, but we're still losing.
Yep.
That's what you get when you have to pick your poison, and you didn't double down on Zach Edey. And that's I wasn't brought to tears when I saw the confetti coming down, you know, as they were getting the trophy, but it was darn near, because I've watched for years watching Purdue suffer their own volition or just hitting a hot team, doesn't matter, lose early or lose at heartbreaking moments like against Virginia or against Duke when Glenn Robinson led them to the Elite Eight.
I mean, for 44 years.
Correct. Every year there was an end to the season that was disappointing. Now, that's not to say that they won't get beat either on Saturday or on Monday, But the fact remains is they're in the Final Four, and it still gives me goosebumps to feel that and say that when I'm talking about Purdue.
Well, and with college basketball, I mean, it's the one odd sport where reaching the Final Four is almost the pinnacle. Like, yeah, it's celebrated just as much as the national championship. Like, you win your region, like, you've made it. You're putting a banner up in your arena.
I talked to Mason Gillis on the court afterwards, mm-hmm. and I've posted this, but I talked to him, and I said, you're at the top of the mountain. How's this feel? He says, we're not at the top of the mountain. He says, we've got two more games, then we're at the top of the mountain. And he says, but this feels awesome.
Yeah,
like the way that they handled, they celebrated winning that Final Four. But like, you know how teams usually celebrate when they put their little placard on the bracket to in the locker room after a win, after they beat Gonzaga. Miles Colvin got the little placard and went boop, and you hear like real life, like it was business. They yep. weren't messing around. This year is a different Purdue team than years past. It really is.
And I mean, no matter what, because we don't know what's going to happen this weekend.
Sure.
No matter what, this 2024 Purdue team is going to go down as one of the greatest that's ever played in West Lafayette. If they win,
they have the most wins.
It'll be the most, or it'll be the best. But like, oh, this is sure. already. And I guess that's my point. And like, to your point about Mason Gillis and the players' attitudes, that's the right perspective, right? Like, you're still in the hunt, but like, if we can zoom out, and we can as like spectators and observers, this is already one of the crown jewels of Purdue basketball forever. But like, there is more that can be ate on
for
that
sure.
play.
And let me tell you, Friday night against Gonzaga, Zach Edey was not the best player on the court, and he scored 27 points and 16 rebounds, and he wasn't even close to being the best player on the court. Braden Smith, by far, was the best player on that court. There was nothing Gonzaga could do, and the whole talk all the way up to that game time was, can Purdue handle Gonzaga's guards? Gonzaga mm-hmm. couldn't handle Purdue's guards because mm-hmm. Braden Smith was the puppet just running, I'm going to do whatever I want. Yeah, Zach Edey got 27, but probably six of those came off of passes from Braden Smith, who knew exactly when to get it to him or where to get it to him. No, don't get me wrong, it's not hard to, you know, deposit the ball to the post to a 7-4 dude, but there were some passes that you're just like, oh my gosh, why would he make that? Oh my, well, okay, right there, you know. And he was the best player. He to me has stepped up into the middle of the biggest stage and shown that he is one of the best, if not the best, point guard in the country right now.
He's criminally underrated. Like, I completely
for sure.
agree. And this goes back to conversations we had in October, Sam, when we talked about Purdue basketball for this year. You referenced the Fairleigh Dickinson game from a year ago. Ball pressure just absolutely destroyed Purdue in that game. And
yeah.
I still think Braden Smith was a good ball handler then, but they were absent of a athletic dynamic that could help. And now having Lance Jones, having Miles Colvin, having guys like that that can help teeter things, and it changes the dynamics of it. Teams aren't quite so high on the idea of pressing and extending the defense
right.
because they got guys who can make you pay where that wasn't there last year.
I asked Braden after the game too. I asked him, I said, last year, your criticism was you didn't make the best of decisions in high pressure situations. I said, did any of that creep into your head when you're only up one with a few minutes left? He says, nope, didn't even enter my mind. And he said, anybody that wants to keep talking bad about me, go ahead, because I'm going to perform at the highest level and win. So to have that as your floor general, being the one saying that and saying, you know what, what you say is not going to affect how I play my game. He's letting it roll off his back, and he is performing so well right now.
Yeah, that is awesome. We'd be remiss if we don't talk about the 40 burger that Zach Edey drops in the Elite
Career
Eight.
High.
Maybe one of the best wins in Purdue's program's history.
And one of the biggest blocks. One of the biggest yes. blocks. The intern and I walked down. You know my intern, Tristan. But we walked down to the floor to watch the last few seconds, and it was at the end that we were at. And oh my good Lord. First off, clean block. Somebody yep. was like, oh, foul. No, it was a clean block. Trust me, it was a clean block.
No, and you're right. The only and this is not playing devil's advocate, but watching
no.
it in real time, the camera angle did not do it justice. And once they no. showed a replay, you're like, oh, clean.
That's why I said, because my angle that I was watching it from, there was nothing that, like, it was a clean block. Yep. Kinect was just going up kind of reckless and got the ball blocked away. But the way that crowd exploded at that point, it was like, oh my goodness, this celebration is going to be amazing. And it was.
A goosebump moment. I do got to ask too, besides Zach Edey doing his thing and eating and whatnot in the Elite Eight, the media spread, did you get Little Caesars pizza, chicken tenders?
One day we had Little Caesars. Now, I will tell you. Since we're Little Caesars for the food. For Little Caesars Arena, you expect Little Caesars pizza at least once. Mm-hmm. And we got it. We had it one day, which was Friday. But they had box lunches with some shaved turkey or some sliced turkey and some cheese and a little bit of like Italian dried tomato, like vinaigrette. Oh, beautiful. Oh my goodness. And kettle cooked jalapeno chips. Oh, beautiful. It was so beautiful. It brought a tear to my eye. It really did. But we had pizza one day and I loved the woman that I handed my meal ticket to. I said, how many pieces? She says, I'm not watching.
That is awesome.
So it was a long day. So I piled a few pieces on there just to be able, because I knew I wasn't coming back to the workroom to get anything other than maybe water.
That's living this life has not been healthy nutritionally for me, because you have to act like a camel. Like when you have an opportunity to eat, you have to
store it in you
because you have no idea when the next
you're like, oh God, I'm not even hungry, but I got to keep eating. Because I don't know when my next meal's coming. You know?
It's so true.
And on Friday, it was 1:30 before we left. It was 1:30 before we. It was 1:30 before we left in the morning on Saturday morning, before we left the arena, and there wasn't food available after 5:00. Yep. Like it was, there were snacks. Don't get me wrong. There were, you know, some fruit and maybe some chips in there, but nothing of substance. And it was just like, yep, I got to pack it in now.
You just turn into a camel. It's so
that's right.
Funny.
People are like, yeah, I'll take that if it means I get to be in the arena while the games are being played, 100%, you jerks.
100%. And it's true, but it is something that nobody ever realizes until you do it is the,
if I wanted chicken tenders on a non-chicken tender day, I had to go buy those things.
So real quick to wrap up Purdue conversation, Zach Edey cutting the net down without a ladder. Did you
amazing
have a front
and
view
then
of
he
that?
Walked to the other end to cut down that net with no ladder either.
That is awesome. And then of course, piece of that net he gave to Gene Katie, who was there in attendance.
Which I got to shake his hand. They walked him right after Zach Edey gave him the net, and after Coach Painter gave him the Final Four shirt, they brought a folding chair and set it down. I'm standing there randomly watching, and they set him down right next to me. I'm like, this is meant to be. So somebody walked with him and was asking him questions about, you know, what it feels like to finally see Purdue. And I leaned down after he was done. I said, Coach, I just want to shake your hand and thank you for all the what you have done to this point to get these guys in place to be able to celebrate this. And I'm so happy you were here to see it. Shook his hand, congratulated him, told him I loved him, and walked away because, you know what? He gets asked so many questions, and he's at the point where he shouldn't have to, you know? Yeah. But I did get to shake his hand, which made my day.
How did what was the emotion that you witnessed on him?
I think he was still in disbelief. Like he just, you could tell he was very emotional. He wasn't sitting there crying, but you could just tell that it was a lot to take in for him. And it was, yes, very moving to the point where I think he was like, okay, I'm tired. I'm old for one thing. I need to sit down. But I think it was getting emotional for him to where he just needed a second to sit down, kind of gather himself. He's going to get bothered and talked to. But he was, you could tell the picture that the intern took of me shaking his hand, you could tell he just looked, he didn't look scared because I was shaking his hand. He just, you could tell there was a lot of emotion in him and he was just trying to process it still.
There was just a lot of overwhelming feelings.
For sure. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty. And the last maybe Purdue emotional tidbit, Robbie Hummel was calling the game for Westwood One on radio. So he was there and I saw some of the photos of him. Really teary-eyed, kind of welled up after the game. That seemed to be, because I think, and I was talking with somebody else about this, I think when you play word association with Purdue basketball, I mean, Matt Painter, Gene Katy comes up. And then, like, I think one of the first names people will go to after that is Robbie Hummel. And I think
this generation absolutely does.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, besides Glenn Robinson, like, of previous generations, like, in this century, I think Robbie Hummel's going to be one of the first names you come away with.
It is. Because, honestly, he is the reason why they didn't make the Final Four the year that they should have early in Matt Painter's career, because he blew his knee out four games before the end of the season. And I'm not saying it's his fault, but, like, he's the reason. Like, if he doesn't blow his knee out, Purdue's full strength, and they very well could have been dancing in the Final Four that year. But it just, he blew his knee out, and then he tried to come back, and he blows his knee out again. So, like, he has been snake bitten, and I think that's Matt Painter even talked about that in the press conference, said that, you know, look, we, you know, those guys set the foundation for what we are doing now. So it is very much so what we should be thanking them and celebrating them and allowing them to make this their Final Four as well. Yep. Because if it weren't for Robbie Hummel, Etuan Moore, and Juwan Johnson, we may not have the Boilermaker team that is there now, because they stuck it out. They started winning. They showed that Matt Painter could coach, and the rest is history, as they say, you know.
How are we tapped out on the Purdue stuff? Is there anything else you want to get in before I segue
Well, unless we're going to analyze the Final Four a touch more, because I honestly will not be shocked if Purdue cuts the Nets down Monday.
Ooh, okay. Well, let's go ahead and start with Saturday then. Purdue has NC State. As much as this tournament and this March Madness has been void of Cinderellas, NC State is that Cinderella, having won their last nine games in a row. I mean, this was a team on life support. The coach was on the hot seat. And all of a sudden, they win five in a row in the ACC tournament, including a game where they were down three with Virginia at the foul line. The free throw is missed, and they bank in a buzzer-beating three to send to overtime.
They don't go to the tournament. Journey.
I mean, if the free throw's made or they don't bank in that three, like, none of this is ever happening. Mm-hmm. But now America's fallen in love with DJ Burns, because America loves a big man, and God do I as well. I mean, he is as fun as it gets to watch play basketball.
Well, there's a couple of things that I was going to say.
Oh, go ahead.
For one thing, my wife doesn't know college basketball. She picked NC State to win the whole thing. So her and I right now are going head-to-head in the Final Four, because my national champion is Purdue, and they're playing. So, but Burns shouldn't. He tried to very quickly qualify what he was meaning. But he gave Zach Edey a little bit of bulletin board material by saying, oh, I haven't been tested yet. Yep. Oh, okay. I'm going to drop 50 on you or something. Like, I don't know that he even sees DJ Burns on the defensive side, honestly, because Trey Kaufman-Wren is the more athletic and can be, don't get me wrong, Zach Edey is a physical being, but Trey Kaufman-Wren is probably going to be the one that guards him more. Not saying that, and then they just drop Edey back. And I tell you what, the discrepancy of free throws, I'm tired of hearing, well, Purdue only gets there because Zach Edey standing in the middle of the lane deters people from going to the hoop. That's why they don't shoot as many free throws. But anyways, I don't know that Purdue can lose to NC State, because that would be yet another double-digit seed that Matt Painter loses to in the tournament.
But, you know, this one's different.
It is different. It is absolutely different.
But it's a fair point that I did not even consider before. I mean, honestly, if you're not a Big Ten fan, you're not a Purdue fan, whatever, I think a lot of America is going to be rooting for DJ Burns, because they are as much the Cinderella as Cinderella's get in this tournament.
I was rooting for NC State and DJ Burns until they got matched up with Purdue. So, like, I understand it completely. Yep. But I also did notice that StubHub released a graphic of their aftermarket sale of the Final Four tickets. The state of Indiana has bought more of the aftermarket tickets than Alabama, Connecticut, and North Carolina combined.
I believe that.
Purdue's going to have a big contingency in Phoenix.
Oh, and Purdue fans are really going to, as much as, because I believe Mackey Arena is one of the best environments in college.
They're going to make that Mackey Southwest.
Well, when they do the whose house, our house, that's going to be a bone-chilling experience, I think, for Purdue fans that are there. Like, I really believe that'll be a really cool moment for them.
So what I was getting at on that one was is it's going to be very much a home game for Purdue in that aspect, to the fact that they're going to have a much larger and that's not saying that, you know, the UConn and Alabama fans aren't going to start cheering for NC State if they start keep hanging with them, but the extras out there are going to be Purdue. It's going to make it hard for NC State. Now, that's not to say they can't do it, because, I mean, shoot, they've won nine. What was the graphic? January 1st to March, like, 14th, the day before the ACC tournament started, they had won eight games. Through the first two rounds of the tournament, they'd won eight games.
I mean, it's true. Well, and so, like, that's part of it is this is a team that's just on a magical ride, and you wonder how long those last. I'm with you. Like, if you take away the context around it of NC State's just playing out of their mind, Purdue's obviously the better team.
Sure.
Like, I think that's fair to say they're more talented, more well-rounded, as proof of the 30-game sample size we had before all the postseason action.
Right.
I find it hard to predict. I would have guessed the magical ride would have ended earlier than this, because I think teams that win the conference tournament but don't do well in their regular season, those are teams that usually get bounced pretty quick in March.
I thought Madness. Marquette was going to get them.
Yeah, and like NC State's just proving to be the anomaly when it comes to doing your March Madness predictions. So I find part of that to be hard to predict, but I'm with you overall. I think Purdue's the better team. I think the spread was set at like 8.5 points in favor of Purdue last I checked about a day ago.
Give me one second. Keep talking and I'll check for you.
Yeah. Well, and that will help kind of give an understanding, but I think a lot of
minus 9.5 Purdue.
9.5. So the line even moved down a little bit.
It's probably after Burns made a statement.
People said, "Oh, we gotta dump on you.
That's
now.
Not good."
Well, and this is why Big Ten bias remove. I think the women's Final Four has a little bit more intrigue than the men's Final Four, because you have a game where the spread is 9.5 for Purdue NC State. And the other one's even uglier than that, with UConn
11.5 for that,
and Alabama. Like, UConn's favored by 11.5 points. And meanwhile, the women have a great matchup that we'll be getting to in a moment. But let's go ahead and shift to that other side of the Final Four with UConn and Alabama for a moment. UConn, I thought before this tournament started, and I had said, look, March Madness might March Madness, but they're the best team, and I think it's by a margin heading into it. And that Illinois game in the Elite Eight, I don't know if I've ever seen a murder on the basketball court like that. That was overwhelming.
I said the same thing, because at the half, I tweeted out, like, look, Illinois.
They probably should have been up at half.
Yeah. But Terrence Shannon Jr. had, what, 4 points at the half? And I thought, if he can heat up, Illinois is in great shape. They're in great shape. And then the dismantling happened. Like, UConn, and the kicker was UConn, or Illinois wasn't getting horrible shots. They weren't getting horrible shots. They just weren't hitting their shots. And UConn was just going down and laying it in, or dunking it, and they just did it so methodically. And you know what? We'll give you the 20-footer. Go ahead. Bong. And then the times they did get into the hoop, they couldn't get it to fall. They it was hats off to UConn for that, because they absolutely dismantled an offensive team that was basically scoring at will and shut down a man who had been averaging close to 40 points in his games up to that point.
Yep.
It was an amazing game to watch.
A 30-0 run is unheard of. I mean,
especially in the Elite Eight.
And to your point, we're talking about an Illinois team that has one of maybe a top five offense. I haven't looked recently in the country. Yeah. Like, this is a good group. And to defend them the way they did, to get out and run the way they did, it just, this UConn team is on a mission like many defending national champs you don't quite see to this degree. And they're a real threat, more than a real threat. They're probably the favorite to repeat in this Final Four and win it all. And I, you know, teams that have climbed to the top of the mountaintop and stay there, they have this interesting way of finding motivation and fuel heading into games.
When you've got a coach like Dan Hurley, he's going to find anything to motivate you.
Well, and so, like, he got upset about the seating or the location and the teams they were playing. He goes, we know what the committee was trying to do. And he
goes, were seated the best team overall.
He goes, we're going to run through this entire tournament to his team, like, amping them up. And then, of course, they get ready to fly out to Phoenix, and the plane has an issue, so they get delayed. They don't land in Phoenix until, like, 3 a.m.
Yeah, it was like, 3 a.m. Eastern.
Yeah, like Thursday morning.
Or 6 a.m. Eastern, sorry.
6 a.m. Eastern, thank you. But like they're starting to twist that into motivation. Like I remember a couple of years back when Georgia won their second national championship, and one of the players in the post game was like, you know, nobody believed in us. We saw all the articles of like 6 wins, 5 wins, and it was like nobody ever thought that. Like, no, we thought this is where you would be. Like, you guys just makeshifted a narrative to give you motivation, which I understand. Like, you got to find ways to be motivated. UConn has taken a page out of that book. Like, they will find any kind of thing.
They
like
burnt my toast.
The Last Dance documentary with Michael Jordan, and when he's like, and I took that personally. Like, that's UConn right. Men's basketball, just about anything.
Dan Hurley's going to, you know, get up tomorrow morning and throw his orange juice because they burn his toast. That's another reason why we're going to win this, because they just don't respect our toast. You know, something.
Honestly, I find that to be kind of hard to do, but they do sure. It really well.
Like, he does a good job at it.
But, I mean, they seem like a team on a mission. Alabama, I think they've had a pretty good run. Obviously, a great run there in the Final Four. I think Grant Nelson's been outstanding for them.
Sears has been fun to watch. Fantastic, too. The Ohio transfer.
Who did you say? I'm sorry.
Sears,
yeah. I just don't know that there's enough horses. This felt like, unless March Madness was going to March Madness, and unless Purdue was going to be able to shake the curse and bring some good juju to change the history of things, it felt like our best two teams heading in were UConn and Purdue, and we could be on like a slow march to it, and it still feels that way to me.
Let's not forget, though, that Alabama possesses the ball 80-plus times a game. I will keep falling back on that because there was something, you know, somebody made the mention of, you know, Alabama, you've got to, well, I mentioned this last week to you, is that you've got to have some semblance of, you know, not the franticness that Alabama explores every single game. They've yet to do that. They've yet to calm down and get into a pattern. They've been frantic. They have, and they've done nothing but win their games, including against North Carolina, a team that many people thought could be in Phoenix right now, and probably a team that could contend against UConn to get to the national championship. Now, I'm not saying that a lot of people, but that was the team coming out of that bracket that people thought maybe that could be the team that could upset UConn from getting to the national championship game if they make it to the Final Four. Alabama beat them.
Yep.
And so, like, when does their magical run end? And is it UConn? And you know, honestly, I'm not saying, I'm kind of playing the devil's advocate there, because I feel UConn's just the way they dismantled Illinois' offense. That's what blows me away.
Like, and there's been a lot of talk because, I mean, we love DJ Burns during this postseason about him and Zach Edey and how fun this matchup might be. The one that I think we're going to end up with in the championship game, I think, is going to be the real most fun one. It is Donovan Clingan from UConn and it's Zach Edey from Purdue. Clingan's got a different kind of length than a lot of the big men in America possess. I think that should be, if we get that for a championship game, a hell of a heavyweight battle to see who cuts the nets down.
Oh, and you know, honestly, I guess that's what gives me, and it's not even the Purdue fan in me, hope that Purdue is cutting. It wouldn't shock me to see Purdue win that game. Is if you go back to the last 2 years, Purdue and UConn are the two most consistent, minus one day in March, the most consistent teams in the country. So therefore, and Purdue has not gotten worse than they were last year. they've gotten nothing but better than what they were last year, which also tells me that they, you know, and UConn too. Don't take this as I'm saying UConn's the dumpster fire, but Purdue has done nothing. Look at what they've done with the, you can't say, well, they played a cupcake schedule. No, they played the hardest, one of the hardest schedules in the country, and they only lost to Big Ten teams this year. So yep. Anybody that they've played that's not in the Big Ten Conference, they've beaten. Whether you think they deserved the win, whether they did, that's another thing that gives me. They've just been able to, minus that one day in March, the last 2 years have been one of, if not the most consistent teams in the country. And Dalton decided, I'm betting he got a phone call is what happened there or something.
I didn't get a phone call. I just dropped out. It was really bizarre. But I'm back, at least I think.
But I didn't say much other than you pretty much heard everything I had to say, though. So Purdue, that's why it wouldn't shock me to see Purdue beat UConn on Monday night. Taking for granted, yeah. Purdue makes it there and UConn makes it there.
Yeah.
I
really think that will be one of the better championship games we've had in recent time. Maybe since North Carolina, Kansas, that was a pretty anticipated one a few years back. It'll definitely be better
than last year, wasn't it?
I think it was 2 years. Yeah.
Because yeah, Coach K's last year.
Yes. Cause 3 years ago was Baylor and Gonzaga. That was a great one. Like this was going to be in,
it was a great one in the aspect that Gonzaga was undefeated and Baylor absolutely just pummeled them whole hand, hard, just ran roughshod over them.
Correct.
I think they were up 19 within the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, sometimes you get a Final Four you're just not excited for, like last year. I mean, it was cool to see FAU. It was cool to see Miami, I guess. Like, you know what I mean? But like, UConn,
they weren't the sexy basketball schools that you kind of like. Alabama, never been there, but they're a good football school. So you think, okay, maybe. And then you have UConn, who's the blue blood, and you're freezing up on me, so I'm not sure what's going on with you. But then you have, you know, North Carolina State, who probably has had one of the greatest victories in NCAA tournament history.
Yep.
And then you have Purdue, who has the most Big Ten championships, you know, and they're finally making it back to the Final Four, and they have the best player in the country.
Yep. So I think it's going to be a great, hopeful national championship if we get those two. That should be a game to remember. But you mentioned NC State making it to the Final Four. They did it on the men's and women's side, as did UConn. You have, for the first time ever, two schools that have made it both for the men and women in the Final Four in the same year, which somebody tweeted out recently, there's 12 times total this has ever happened. This is the 11th and 12th time ever that a school has made it to the Final Four in the men's and women's side. Believe it or not, UConn is the leader in this department.
Shocker!
They did it in 2014, where I think they won it all on both sides.
Yes, that was the year that both UConn men and women won it. And the only reason I know that is I was in Dallas at the time that the Final Four was in Arlington.
Okay. And 2011.
That year.
2011, they both made it. 2009, they both made it. South Carolina did it in 2017. Syracuse did it in 2016. I'm trying to think who else. There was a Georgia from 1983. Yep. There was a Duke from, I think, 99. I know I'm missing. UConn did it again in 2004. I'm missing one other one. I'm tempted to back out here in a moment and take a look. But there's one Big Ten one. Do you know the one Big Ten school?
Maryland. No, Maryland wasn't part of the Big Ten at the time. This year. Oh, no, wait. No, they're not the same team. Would it not Michigan State?
Michigan State.
Was it really?
2005. Michigan State made it for both of them.
That's right. I was thinking men and women teams from Big Ten because this is the first time since 2015 that a Big Ten team from the men and women have made it to the Final Four.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah, I didn't even consider that either.
I wasn't thinking same school, even though that's all we'd been talking about for the past 3 minutes. You know,
but so paying attention. If we segue over to the women's Final Four, I mean, this is fascinating because NC State, as we mentioned, both on the men's and women's side, They have to take on the Goliath that it feels like nobody's really talking about because we've got so many superstars that are taking up so much attention. But South Carolina will be playing NC State. That is game one, correct, tonight at 7 o'clock?
7 o'clock.
And then we have Iowa.
11.5 point favorite, South Carolina.
That seems about right. And then Iowa and UConn at 9 o'clock, which that game should be phenomenal.
It's to me probably going to be by far the better game of the two, but you know what? Stranger things, IU held their own against South Carolina, and so I know that the South Carolina is possibly, you know, one that could anybody can get beat, but it, you know, if NC State's playing well, then maybe.
Yeah, I did.
But I think you're right. UConn Iowa is going to be the better game.
Oh, big time. And I did take a quick peek. Texas also did it in 2003. That was the other school.
Okay.
TJ
Ford.
But yeah, no. And we talked about the ratings earlier. 12.3 tuning in for Iowa LSU. Yeah. We talked about the 6.7 that tuned in for UConn USC. I mean, this tournament on the women's side has superstar after superstar after superstar. And now we're going to see Clark and Beckers go at it. And this is must-watch TV. Like, this should be a great, great battle between two guards. Honestly, Beckers, and some of the discourses started to pump up a little bit more nationally. If Beckers has been healthy throughout her entire career, like, it's also Caitlin Clark. Like, she's that good of a player.
Well, and Gino Auriemma even said, you know, Caitlin Clark's the best, but, you know, and I'm sorry for saying what I did about Beckers, but, you know, it's true. If she's not injured, she's tearing it up at just as much. That Iowa UConn game is going to be a one whale of a game.
And I think, honestly, between the men or women, I mean, obviously, you're going to feel different because you're a Purdue fan. But, like, that's the most anticipated game to watch. Like, if you're just an observer of both, like, the men and women, like, that game has it all. And Beckers, for her to spearhead UConn to the Final Four, like, look, if you're playing catch-up on what's going on, UConn is injury-riddled. It's amazing that they're here.
Amazing, they're a three seed. For the type of season that they had,
they've been so banged up, and for them to get to this point, nonetheless, that's one of the more impressive things. And it feels weird because it wasn't too long ago that UConn won like 300 games in a row. It feels like
it was 762 games straight.
But now, like because of the adversity they faced and whatnot, and they're actually a bit of an underdog now. Like, it feels like more and more people are kind of, like, wanting to see UConn win, which is, like, if the Yankees one time decide to get into the playoffs limping in, and people are like, oh, yeah, you know, the poor Yankees, we got to root for them. Like, it is kind of a weird experience.
Well, we're getting fans that are pulled away from when UConn was dominant. So now they're an upstart. They're, oh, that's great. No, they're one of the best – they're the number two in my mind blue blood ever for women's basketball, Tennessee basketball being number one and UConn being number two. It just that's the way it is. And but 33-5 is what UConn is, and in like in stores they're thinking five losses, we're on the bubble. Like that, they're used to being 35-1 or whatever, you know. And so 33-5, that's a rough season for them to have. Because
by UConn standards.
Yeah. So this game, I was a 2.5 point favorite, and I anticipate that being back and forth.
That like we said, must watch TV. That game will be awesome. I do want to take a moment and talk about Iowa's game in the Elite Eight, because again, good chance that you tuned in and watched it. 12.3 million viewers watched it. That's more than the entire World Series from this past year. It's more than the entire NBA Finals. It's more than all of Thursday Night Football. It's more than every college football regular season game except for Ohio State, Michigan. It was more than every conference championship game except the SEC. There were more people that watched the Iowa-LSU women's game than watched the Big Ten football championship game. Like,
you're telling me Michigan-Iowa wasn't must-see TV?
To me, Iowa football is always must-see TV. I don't know what everybody
for the
else
is. I'm here for the punts. That's what I'm gonna, every time I go to an Iowa game, it's going to be a shirt that says I'm here for the punts.
I love it so much. It's bonkers to think about how well this game drew. And a lot of it was the storylines. Yeah. And, of course, it was a repeat of the national championship game from a year ago. There were degrees of this, if we talk about the game, degrees of jaw-droppingness from Caitlin Clark where you just kind of sat there stunned like, oh, it's one of those nights where Clark's feeling it and she drops 40-some points en route to the win. But honestly, just as much as – because there was like a watch party we went to. As many times as I sat there and said, oh, my God. Or also the times where I said, what is LSU doing defensively? What was that? And it's not to – look, a lot of people I think are having fun with like Haley Van Lith guarding her or whatever. Yeah. Look, to me, I don't know how you don't help at certain points. I think I was most susceptible when you pressured the ball. And goodness, get the ball out of Clark's hand. She's a great passer, but make somebody else score it besides her. And the idea to go under a ball screen when Clark is there, like I remember at the watch party, she got a ball screen and the defender went under and Clark,
what are you doing?
I immediately said, oh, there's three and boom, boom. Like it just, there were no adjustments made. I really just found that entire experience to be pretty bewildering. Like I said, I think some people have kind of had fun like with memes and whatnot using Haley Van Lith. I don't necessarily see it as Haley Van Lith's fault. Like I just don't understand what the game plan was there to stop Clark. I mean, we're talking about the all-time leading scorer.
Well, and it almost begs to me that maybe they weren't as prepared than they should have. Like, you know, yeah, we played them last year and we beat them. So what? Don't you think that's motivation for the best player in the country to make sure that doesn't happen again? You should probably work that from day one after you cut down the nets on making sure if you play Caitlin Clark again, she is not the one that's going to beat you, and have a better plan than that. Because you're right. As soon as you go under a ball screen, she's got enough space.
Oh my God. And like that kept happening. And there until I want to say 4 minutes left in a game was the first time I saw a hedge on a screen. And it's like, you just let it go for 36 minutes where you just right. let her be one-on-one in ball screen action. Like, yeah, you're losing. Like it was a wild experience to me because, and maybe this is just because I've seen Caitlin Clark play so many times this year, but you know what's going to happen if you give her any room whatsoever. And she is that kind of good that it takes an unorthodox game plan. It takes a unique game plan to try to contain her or contain the others because the other players stepped up big too. Siddha Falter. I mean, so many of them stepped up in big ways. I just thought that was a really strange experience. And hats off to Iowa. I mean, Caitlin Clark did her thing. Iowa did their thing, and they're moving on.
I can almost guarantee you that Gino Auriemma took note of that and said, we're not going to let that happen. Everything within our power, that is not going to happen anymore, because, or at least against us. Or at least that's what our plan is. No, you know, they're going to make adjustments. I was going to make adjustments and, you know, a slight. They're not going to change their game plan, though. It's going to be the ball goes through Caitlin Clark. If she thinks she can get the shot off and get points, then she's going to do it. If she needs to pass it, she's going to do that, too.
And look, Clark's going to hit some of those shots that there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, and they're going to be stupid shots, like just stupid shots that get hit.
It's but keeping some of those long threes to like three of them, four of them instead of like
I thought you were going to say 30 feet, 35 I mean, feet. That's what I thought you were going to say.
Well, you can't give her space out there. She's going to hit contested ones out there and you live with those, but you can't just give her the open ones. That was really strange. And I'm excited to see what UConn decides to do with her. Like, I think that's maybe the most fun thing to watch is how different teams try to stop Iowa. Because, look, I don't know, especially given UConn's lack of depth because of all the injuries and everything else. I'm not exactly sure what all they'll have in the toolbox that they feel comfortable to throw. But let's say Iowa wins that game. Let's say South Carolina wins that game. If I was Dawn Staley in South Carolina, given how athletic and long they are, I would be full court pressing Iowa all game.
You know darn well that Iowa or South Carolina from the day that they got beat has been saying we're beating Iowa if we play them again.
Like I there is the blueprint to it. And it's making those guards sweat. Get the ball out of Caitlin's hand and just all up in the kitchen. Just ball pressure like out the wazoo. Like that's the blueprint, and it's doable. And look, like again, Clark, especially in these games, she's gonna score 30 points. At least. And the big thing is making sure the other players don't score 60, 50.
Or making sure that she does it on 35 shots.
Right.
You know, to where she's taking a majority or a good portion of percentage-wise of the team shots and then limiting the offensive rebounds. That's another thing, is don't let Iowa rebound the ball offensively on misses, because then you're limiting the opportunities that somebody other than Caitlin Clark can put the ball up. You try to shut down Clark and you try to let the rest beat you. I say let Clark go for 40 and you make sure everybody else doesn't.
100%. I think you're onto it there. But it's going to be fun to see. And like I said, there were so many different elements of that game where you just sat there with your jaw dropped. Soak it in tonight with this Final Four, because, I mean, it's we're not guaranteed more Caitlin Clark going off experiences like this, but it should be fun to watch here tonight as they take
it. It is conceivable that we're going to watch her last game, because UConn is not a pushover by any means.
I mean, the spread being 2.5, I think, is pretty telling. Like, this is expected to be a dogfight, and this should be a lot of fun.
And let's think about what the seedings were. Like, Iowa got their one seed from what they did in the Big Ten tournament. They were a two seed all the way through until that tournament, and they snuck in as the one seed. So they've got a really hard bracket comparatively, or, you know, side of the bracket. So UConn is, while they're a three seed, they're a damn good three seed, you know, and Iowa technically was a two seed all year. So they're even closer on their one seed. I get it, but you're probably looking at UConn being the best three seed and Iowa being the number 4-1 seed. So like, they're really close. Tell you, back in the day, 1 and 3 seed, you'd say the one seed's going, no problem. You know, you chalk it up to, and now we're getting to the point where, UConn's a three seed, and we're talking about one of the best programs in the history of women's basketball as a three seed.
It's pretty exciting times, and this should be a lot of fun tonight.
For sure.
Before we close things, Sam, did you have any final thoughts, men's or women's, we didn't get to?
Just enjoy what you're watching. Whether you're a Zach Edey fan or a Purdue fan, enjoy watching him play, because if you get to see him ever in person play especially at the college level, he is a giant among really large men. Like I shook his hand when he walked by me to go cut down the other net, and I have huge, huge hands. Like I have large hands, like double XL sized glove hands, and his hand made mine look like a little child's. Like I really honestly think he could palm the ball like it looks like he's holding one of those little mini
Nerf balls.
So enjoy Purdue, enjoy the women's Final Four too, because this is a packed Final Four.
We're
excited for the men's, or I'm excited for the men's, but this women's one, like you said, if you're just a general fan, both of these Final Fours are great, but the women's one is really got two high profile games going on.
Absolutely. No, I think this is going to be a lot of fun. Look, I mean, if you've been with us for a long time and you've listened to Sam and I talk, you know that we love basketball. The regular season we got all excited for. Once the year started to tip, we got excited when conference season came around. We got excited when postseason came, March Madness came. This has been building for 5-6 months, and this is the home stretch. This is the finish line. So enjoy every moment you have, because we don't get college basketball again for what, 150, 200 some odd days after this weekend.
I may need that time to recover, Dalton, depending on what happens Monday.
Especially if it finishes with the trophy coming to Purdue. You may not be recovered by the start of the season.
I may drive to West Lafayette to see the trophy show up. I don't know yet, but, you know. My wife, when the Cubs won in 2016, she said, "I'm really surprised you're not at the victory parade." Well, this one isn't going to be as large as the seventh largest gathering of human beings on the earth in history of recorded history, but it'll be a sizable one, and I may go for it. I don't know.
Yeah,
I think that's what they call putting your cart before the horse, right?
Yeah, right.
I guess we got to advance to Monday before we even enjoy winning Monday. So, but yeah, it's gonna be such a great time just watching and loving basketball, you know. Just
Sam's got the right
Go ahead.
Sam's got the right PSA. Everybody just enjoy everything about this weekend, man.
Drink it in.
Absolutely.
It's Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern until what, maybe like 12:30, 1 o'clock on Tuesday morning, because that's when
Right.
They tip at 9:20, something stupid.
That's about right. But on the way out, let everybody know where they can find us, Sam.
Yes, sir. Also, real quick, before we jump into this, I will be live, formerly known as tweeting, throughout the Final Four game. And then if Purdue does advance, I will be doing that during the national championship game as well. I'm pretty sure our intern is going to do the show page as well. Kind of just keep people abreast of what's happening in the game. If you're not able to watch it, we'll be able to keep you on pace, but you'll get my ramblings and my yelling at the TV, get off my lawnness throughout both of those games, taking for granted that Purdue plays them both. But if you want to find us, you can go to the TikToks, the Instagrams, or the platform formerly known as Twitter at B1G_talk. Dalton, that's at B1G, not B-I-G. Hold the finger up. There you go. At B1G_talk, big talk. You go to Facebook. We are B1G talk, big talk. Not all big talk. Those are great gentlemen or great people over there, but they're not these people here. we're gooder people. Big talk. But then you can find us on the ASAP network every Friday morning. And then later that day through Lounge Media Group for the podcast version, or if you want to watch the missed stream, go to Spotify. That's where our video is.
Perfect. Well, again, a big thank you to all of you for tuning in and joining us for another week. One of the more special ones, the Final Four coming up. Everybody go out and enjoy it. And for my partner,
this is more special than Purdue making it to the Big Ten championship game.
It's true. It's true. It is true. But for my partner, Sam Sprunger, I'm Dalton Shetler. So long, everybody.
Boiler up.